Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんなところ。
I miss you.What's good, Internet? It is June 23rd, 2017. You are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 74. I'm here in Lobby 1, Brooklyn, New York. It is humid. It is sweaty.
A little muggy out there.
It is muggy. What's your favorite?
I ran to work and it was...
What's your favorite word for when it's gross outside?
I like muggy.
Muggy's
good. Because it feels like you're being mugged by the air.
Daniel Riendo's favorite word for being gross outside, muggy.
Muggy.
Rob Zachney calling in from Los Angeles, where it's probably not very humid. What's your favorite word for a gross northeastern or south? Or the south gets like very muggy.
The humidity.
The humidity is through the roof. What's your favorite humidity word?
I mean, muggy is the word, though. It's the perfect word. Like, because it's... You know, there's a little bit of like smothering to it as well, like you're being mugged.
But I like smothering.
Poetically, it feels like
muggy. Yeah, totally
muggy.
I'm looking at a thesaurus website. I'm not going to say which one. We're not sponsored by any thesaurus website. This one says
we definitely aren't. After you shot me down using purloin in an article.
I like purloin. I like all of your words that
not
are synonyms for other words.
Not enough.
Listen, a lot of people will be like, purloin, is that some sort of, like, Pokemon? It's like some sort of...
Yeah, purloin. It's a little bit... It's like a lion.
So I've actually have this. I've actually designed...
Okay.
This is not a joke. Purloin, I've already designed, is a lion that's also a toilet. Because that, to me, is like the extension of what Pokemon is doing. This isn't a joke. I drew this forever ago.
You have a lion toilet.
On Swapnote, the old 3DS.
Yes.
It's like a porcelain lion. Get it?
Porcelain lion.
Yeah.
Purloin.
Right. Pokemon.
Is that like an aesthetic goal for you? Like, did you draw that out and you're like, someday when
I
hit the big time?
I'll be honest. I'm a terrible artist. Like, I am like the complete garbage because I've never put any effort or time or practice into being good at art.
It takes those things, I guess.
It does, it turns out. But I drew a really good toilet lion. And felt good about it, and then I was like, "Oh, yeah, that's it." So anytime I hear purloin, as in
think of it?
To steal something, the thing that pops into my head, it makes me feel good. It's a word I like. This is my point. I think about the the toilet lion, what steals things.
So I really get the lion part of this. You know, the purr, and also sounds a little bit like lion. Where did
porcelain.
The toilet? Oh,
porcelain. It's also porcelain. It's
like
a double.
Porcelain
it's a porcelain lion.
I get
also,
it.
It's
That's
a purring
lovely.
Lion, but also it's a lion that steals things.
It steals your poop.
It steals your poop.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's what's going on.
Hey, what?
All right.
Yeah, okay. I feel all right. I feel relieved.
Yeah. So it's actually a really nice Pokemon because it steals something you don't want.
You don't want your poop. It does. It'll take care of it.
It'll, like, be very happy about
your poop. I need to find this image now. I think Steve Kim, Fobwashed, has a photo of it for some reason.
Oh, good.
Good.
I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. That's... Times are weird in the days of Swapnote, which was do people know what Swapnote was?
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, for people who don't remember, it was an application that was on the 3DS that you just like swap notes with your buds on.
You could like doodle.
You
a little
on
bit,
doodle,
yeah.
And then they send that doodle off, and it felt cool because they were like really low stakes. So for me, it was I'll fuck around and draw some bullshit. And I don't normally do that because it's like, oh, I'm not going to put this out in the world. But for this, it was like, oh, I'll just send it to Janine and Steve Kim.
Yeah.
And they're like, lol, that's a good fucking toilet line, Austin. Anyway.
I'm really proud of you. It sounds like it went really well.
And then they stopped Swapnote and I stopped drawing. I haven't drawn anything since, well, that's not true. I draw maps all the time, but that's it. Swapnote was shut down because Nintendo claimed...
Oh, well, I think we now know why it was shut down. Like,
we
I don't
know
think...
What
I'm
happened.
Into a big mystery left to the death of Swapnote.
The peak was my toilet lion. And they were like, fuck it, man. Like, we got it.
Shut it down.
We need no
shut
evidence for when Purrlion is in the next Pokemon
that's
game.
That's the thing, yeah.
Mr. Philemy, you need to see this. I'm very sorry, but it appears to be some sort of lion that you poop into.
You poop into.
And it consumes it, but also steals it. Oh, we got it. No, this has got to go.
Shut it down. Was this sent to children?
Yeah.
Not yet. We can't risk it.
Just recall the entire run.
We have to release a new... Is it in 3D? No. Oh, well, we need a different 3DS model where this line will never be in 3D, just in case. Oh, 2DS, God. Make it.
Yeah, well, I guess they had to cancel Pokemon Purrlion and Snorkfox. I mean, like, I was really looking forward to that game, but it ain't going to happen.
What was that second one?
Snorkfox.
Spell that one out.
S-N-A-R-T.
Uh-huh.
F-O-X.
Snartfox?
Snartfox.
Uh-oh.
Just tell me.
Okay.
Never mind.
No, tell me about
Snartfox.
I think extrapolate, but...
I need Danielle to.
Okay.
Not because I don't know, but because
Snartfox
I need to share. Uh-huh.
Is part pig, part fox,
uh-huh.
and part bidet. That's how it works.
No, I know what it is. I don't know how it works.
Okay.
Where's the fox part? Where's the pig
part?
Because
it's part fox.
No, but where in the design?
Well, okay, it has like, a fox tail. It has a fox tail.
Okay, but not like a fox face. It has
a pig
face.
No, it has more of a pig face.
It doesn't have like a pig tail?
It swirls a little bit, but it's more of a foxy, like it's
fluffy...
a bushy tail. Yeah, exactly. It's a very special Pokemon. It's a starter.
Where on it is the bidet part?
It's like its stomach.
It's under it?
Yeah.
It's all on all fours.
It's on all fours.
Wait.
And
so
it, like streams
wait.
Water.
Does it do the thing where it, like, gets on its back and it's like, oh, rub my belly?
Yeah, all the time.
But then it's a bidet.
Yes, and it's very helpful. You often use this after you hang out with your purrline. Yeah. You get both in one.
This is
This is like a tour into, like, the most nightmarish mythology that I can imagine. It's really... It's really horrifying.
All right, Rob, so what's yours? Where's your Pokemon?
Yeah.
What's your favorite Pokemon you've developed?
We need three. We need three starters.
Nope, sorry. I do not have anything that's fucked up enough to contribute to this.
He nagged us.
No, he didn't nag us. He nagged our creations.
He nagged our creations.
But here's what I love is we actually have a brand new feature coming to Pokemon Purrlion and Snorkfox.
We do?
There are only two starters. It's the first time ever.
Oh, weird.
You only have two starters. The third one is just an empty Pokeball. Inside there just says, Rob. Rob didn't make me. Rob didn't love me enough.
It's just Rob's face and the, like, Ghostbusters sign. Yeah. Like, nope, none of this
that's
shit.
It.
Absento. That's Rob's Pokemon.
There's no shit because
Fuck.
The Purrlion keeps
right.
stealing it.
Uh-huh. How has your week been, friends?
Real good.
Yeah?
Less
I mean,
surreal
it's better now.
This.
Yeah. Anyway, the words for humid include damp, dank.
Dank.
Moist. That's
dank
not.
Is a good
I would never
one.
Say, oh, it's moist out. That's not a thing I'd say.
Though that
oppressive?
Is the grossest way to say it.
I don't know. I'm fucking so over people being caught up on moist.
They hate moist and they hate damp, right?
What's the other? Yeah, there's other words like that where they're just like, yeah.
Moist. My sister hated milk growing up. She thought it sounded terrible.
Milk is a bad word for what milk is.
Yeah. It should be more of a, like, milk with an E.
I don't like that either. I think it needs to be smoother. Because, like, for me, like, the defining quality of, like, a good glass of milk is like, oh, wow, there's, like, a smoothness, a silkiness to it.
What about, like, moosh?
Huh.
We're getting there?
Getting there, sort of.
No, because moosh is, like, that implies, like, a porridge type. Like, it's a smoosh.
Yeah,
that's true.
You're right. I was just thinking, like,
moosh. Your moosh is made with milk, but...
Don't ever say moo juice
You don't like
again.
Your moo juice? I don't know.
That might be the third starter.
Fuck that.
The moo juice is definitely the third starter. Yes. Sorry, Rob. Absento is done, and moo juice is
killed
in.
Killed the Pokemon that Rob never even brought to life.
I killed the like, concept of no Pokemon.
I just think milk... as a word has like this hard edge to it at the end. It also has like that LK sound that can be kind of hard.
Look.
Like that. Like, oh no, that's not what I want to think about when I think of milk.
Milk is a nice, smooth, creamy
totally.
Substance.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's why like coffee is
coffee
good.
Is such a good word.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah. Okay, cool. Oppressive. Soggy. Oppressive is like.
Soggy.
Only the only people who say oppressive make like $2 million 120 years ago when describing the weather. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's oppressive.
I do say it is extremely oppressive out here.
And they're fanning themselves.
And like
they say
stepping on
so
other people who they are
oppressive.
Literally oppressing. Like yes. Stepping on the backs of their workers.
Literally oppressive.
Soggy, which just is going to make
Soggy's
me think.
Good, but it's nasty.
It's nasty.
It's like soggy underwear.
No, it's soggy.
It's swamp ass.
I kind of like swampy is also just a good.
Yeah.
Sticky.
My mom says sticky.
Oh, she says
it's
sticky
out.
Yeah. Stuffy to me is always about inside,
yeah.
Not outside.
It's like almost musty.
Yeah. But like, but on a hot day where it's really humid inside, it can feel stuffy. I gotta open a window.
Yeah.
But that to me makes it feel like, oh, this place just doesn't have like a good airflow situation.
Yeah.
Not that it happens to outside.
So it makes me think of like colds, like stuffy nose.
Yeah.
It's no fun.
Sultry is interesting. Sultry is like someone got in that fucking
making
spin
it
factor.
Sexy in there.
Yeah. Someone hired a PR person.
That's
some
Eugene O'Neill shit right there.
Yeah,
like, oh,
right?
It's sultry in here. Like, in a few minutes, things are going to get very real.
Sultry. The thing that I like about that is that it does feel like some Eugene O'Neill shit. Mm. And also feels like a sort of like PR spin on it. It's like, oh, it's not humid out. It's not soggy. It's not muggy. It's sultry.
Oh, like, so it's like
have this.
Come visit the South for the quaint manners and the sultry weather.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yes. Where it's like, oh, there's something sexy about it, like you said.
Yeah.
Like it's
yeah.
We're going through the rest of these and then we're gonna move on.
It's a hot night, sultry.
Clammy, which is like the opposite.
Oh.
It's like the least sexy version
Clammy's
of it.
So gross.
Because clammy almost the thing that's weird about clammy is it feels like it has the humidity but not the heat.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah,
clammy skin is a term we use at when certain things are wrong with a person in the medical field.
Yeah? Do you have, like, the medical definition of clammy?
It's like, generally it means what you would think. Like, it's just, like, moist and cool and pale and diaphoretic is another kind of.
What was that one?
Diaphoretic.
Is that another Pokemon?
Yes. Diaphoretic is a, it's a tree fox, hybrid. Yeah, it's plant and
that
animal.
That one actually sounds okay.
Flora and fauna. Yeah, there's no, like, bathroom association with that one.
Okay.
You know.
I guess that's okay.
It's not as good.
Close is one of these synonyms?
Close.
That's interesting. It's close. I don't.
Like, close to the sun?
I guess. Yeah, it is. Dampish. Which feels
no.
Fake.
You gotta commit to something.
In.
You can't say the weather's
dampish.
Like
it's dampish.
No, say something, you goddamn coward. Like comment on the weather.
Miss me with that dampish bullshit. And mucky. Mucky's fine.
Mucky's good.
Mucky also feels old timey.
It is.
When that rich asshole was like, it's oppressive. The people
it's
who were stepping on
mucky.
Was like, no asshole, it's mucky.
Yeah, because their faces were in the muck
exactly.
as they were being stepped on. So it's
exactly.
really it's rough.
Yes,
it's a rough one.
Outside of it being humid. Outside of it being oppressive, outside of it being muggy.
And not dampish.
How's your week been?
Good, good. I played a lot of horror games this week. Small horror games.
Is
actually.
That your like jam right now? Why?
I guess it is. That in racing
you to
games.
Small horror games.
I played a game called Peridium, which was made for Adventure Jam. And that was like a very cool pixel art point and click sort of take on the thing. So like an Arctic science base where everything has gone horribly
wrong.
Are you
wrong. By yourself or are you with people?
Well, there are sort of people who are turned into weird things.
Okay.
So that was cool. Played that. I played
I
a game today.
I love it when people get turned into weird things.
I do too. Well, I mean, I don't know if I would love it in real life, but I like it in fiction. In real life, it might actually scare me a little bit. I might be a little freaked out. I played a game called Pacific today. I wrote about that in Free Play, which is a first-person sort of exploration horror game where you're in this horrible bunker. You're sort of piecing together clues about what had happened. It's sort of a atomic apocalypse kind of deal.
And that's up now, the article you wrote about?
Yes, that just went up like an hour ago-ish.
Interesting.
You know, if you're listening to this later on, then it went up many hours ago. But yeah, the main game that I've actually been putting more time into, it's a little bit beefier because those two were sort of shorter games, is called The Town of Light. And this is a horror game. That it's making Austin sick already.
I'm already
just
sick.
Hearing about it.
Yeah.
So it's based on an actual real life story and location in Tuscany.
Yes.
Based on a sanatorium that was run by basically Italian fascists.
I believe that was like for years at least. Like at least at its – maybe not at its start, but there was a period for which that was the case, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I played that game back when it was super early and then barely touched it again. So I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on it. I played it when it was like in a – like the Boston Festival of Indie Games basically. And at the time I was like, oh, are we going to get like the same really boring, shitty kind of people who are in mental institutions are dangerous and scary.
Yeah.
And like this is like that's what makes this spooky, mental illness. In fact, and they're like, oh, no, actually, this place is fucked. And people who did deserve treatment and who needed treatment were instead like put into really terrible conditions.
And killed.
And killed.
Really messed up. It's definitely not bulletproof.
Sure.
That it's definitely playing on a lot of the sort of, oh, spooky mental illness. Because there is like an actual sort of horror element to it. And it's not just a spooky, oppressive place.
Right.
But I will read from you the sort of – there's a screen at the beginning that is an attempt to address this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely I'm pretty sure it's translated from Italian.
Yeah,
so.
I think there were Italian devs who made this game.
Yes, so which is cool because it's actually an Italian setting and, you know, it's a real place. But the Town of Light is based on real events, places, and research concerning mental illness and the life of patients in lunatic asylums from the beginning of the 20th century until their closure. It contains stories which may be disturbing. The characters and names are fictitious and any reference to people living or dead is purely coincidental. And then it says, this game uses an artistic interpretation of a former Italian psychiatric institution for dramatic purposes. Please note that mental health services have radically improved around the world. If you think you have psychological problems, please speak to a local doctor or specialist.
Okay.
So it's not bulletproof in its, you know, artistic interpretation of illness.
Sure.
But at least it is somewhat aware.
Tell us about this game.
Like,
so given that that background, what is it? How does it play? What have you been doing? What sticks out?
It's in terms of gameplay, it's fairly standard walking around, exploring, finding notes, finding photographs, finding sort of evidence. You're sort of tracking the history of one particular patient, this one young woman, and sort of her family. There was like a wealthy family, and they put her in this institution. There was a history of mental illness, and you're seeing all these pictures. You're seeing all this propaganda from the fascists, basically. And you're hearing things as well, which is the more – it's the sort of horror part. You're hearing like
– like audio logs but no – but
more
ghosts?
Like they're just triggered. There's not like audio logs necessarily.
Okay.
I'm sure there are at some point. But like, you know, you're hearing things that are like, is it a ghost? Is it her?
Is it like like echoes from the past?
I think so,
or someone talking to you?
I think it's echoes from the past. I think. We're getting there. I'm only a couple hours in. I don't think it's a terribly long game, but I take my sweet time finding every little thing in games like this.
This is how
I
play games, yeah.
It's how I play pretty much everything, but especially a game where exploration and finding all the shit is the point. It's interesting. What's particularly interesting to me is that it's set in Tuscany, which is one of the most beautiful places on Earth.
Right.
And you start the game out in this sort of like outside the institution itself with all these beautiful, like beautiful foliage, and it's sort of fall looking. It's gorgeous. I've been to Tuscany. It's like unreal beautiful. You feel like you're in a postcard every second. And then there's this ugly, horrible, dilapidated building that's just oppressively kind of standing
like,
there.
Stands out in the middle of what is otherwise this really gorgeous area.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
And so you go in, you know, everything's sort of closed off. It's very much like, oh, you know, this is an abandoned building. And then you start kind of digging in and finding all the pieces. I'm definitely enjoying it thus far. There's some performance issues. I'm playing it on Xbox One, and I think maybe the frame rate is a little stuttery, and so it's giving me that sort of slight first-person headache.
Even though you're playing on Xbox One?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So,
that's a bummer.
I don't know if that's what's going on with that.
So, question
for you.
Might
not be a frame rate thing, but yes.
So, is it just like playing on the fact that this is sort of a horrible, abusive, old insane asylum, or is it also dealing with the Italian historical context in which this thing is located? Like, is
very
the fact that, like, the fascists ran this place, like, kind of a key element to this experience?
It absolutely is. You see the posters. You see the sort of vaguely translated, you know, propaganda that's sort of up on the walls and that sort of thing. It is actually translated. I know some Italian, so I'm trying to actually get through and read everything and try to make sense of it, which is an added element for me to have fun with because it's like, oh, I sort of half understand all these signs and that sort of thing. But yes, it is absolutely playing on that, and it's very sort of rooted in that. And they're playing that up with all their sort of materials, saying like, oh, this is from the fascist era. This is from this context. These people are brutalized not just because they were mentally ill, but because of this regime that was in charge that had, you know, obviously no sympathy for, you know, the human element of illness and that sort of thing. So I find it very interesting. I'm going to keep digging.
I'm really
in.
Curious about it. Like I am pretty curious about what the like what that team's I like whenever I see projects like this, what I think is like, okay, what led you to decide that this is like the most interesting way to explore this stuff?
Yeah.
Specifically as like a horror game. Like which isn't to say that like they shouldn't have done it. I'm not at all
right.
Like I'm really interested in this game. But I'm always interested in when people take something that had like this historical you know, fact behind it, this terrible history, and like, okay, where is not the line, but like what are the different ways that you can pull from that stuff? Because you've definitely seen versions of this where you treat it like really – there's a version of this game that could have existed where it was like you go in there and then you start fighting like ghosts of the former patients of this asylum. And like, ooh, that would be like really shitty. And there's the other end of it where it's just like basically a VR experience and it's like walk through this place and see it and like see what's really there.
Like it's a museum.
And like a museum side. And like there's all these other ways. And I don't even think it's a spectrum between those two. Right. I think there's all these other ways that like – you know, they in that opening, they say this game is inspired by a history of treating psychiatric patients in facilities, not just necessarily even this one. Like, I'm sure that there are parts of it that represent other instances in psychiatric care, again, in scare quotes, in other, you know, places throughout the world throughout the last 200 years. There's like all sorts of different ways to do it. I'm always just like, I want developers to talk more about that stuff sometimes.
Yes.
And like, how did you figure this stuff out? Like, that stuff's just fascinating for me, for sure.
I agree completely. So, yeah. I'm interested to see how
it horror
continues.
Games for you, basically, that's it.
Yeah.
Rob, how about you? Have you been doing spooky stuff this week?
I don't know if you'd classify it as spooky, but like post E3, I definitely felt that need to do something that was the equivalent of curling up with a good book and like retreating from the world. So I fired up. I finally got around to playing Sherlock Holmes Crime and Punishments, which I've sort of had on my shelf for ages. And I just really wanted
joint?
To soak
this
up
is,
that era.
Is Frogwares? Is this
oh,
from
yeah,
like the...
Oh, yeah, of course. You know it
okay.
is.
Okay. Listen, I know that they love Sherlock Holmes and also Crime and Punishment. That's all I really know.
They like all of that stuff.
And frogs, I guess.
And frogs. I mean, who doesn't love frogs?
I haven't seen any evidence of frogs, though. Like, there's a lot of cases they've covered, not a single goddamn frog.
Oh, no.
But,
yet. Not yet.
Not yet.
It's going to be like the house thing where it's like, eventually you're going to get the one where it's frog lupus, and that's going to, it's going to throw the whole thing.
Right. It's always frog lupus. It's, I know. Yeah. God.
That's it.
So I started playing this game, and, you know, it's got the classic Frogwares touches. It's a little
What's
awkwardly acted, stilted.
Okay.
Like, okay. It's got some of that. But on the other hand...
It's a frog's view of how people interact. Right, I understand.
Yeah, it's totally. On the other hand, though, it's very lavish. You spend a lot of time just hanging out at 221B Baker Street, and it's... talk about velvet rooms. That is a posh Victorian bachelor pad that you solve crimes in. So what could be better, really,
that sounds good to me.
Oh, yeah. You got a roaring fire, a big friendly hound dog that's just like sleeping in the corner. You've got your lab. You've got tons of, research materials and equipment that you can sort of use to solve cases. And then you go around and you scrutinize crime scenes and people to like find their tells. And then you make deductions. What I will say is in terms of production values, it feels like with Crimes and Punishments, and there's actually a more recent one, I think. I think the most recent one is The Devil's Daughter. But they've gotten – the Frogwares games used to be really, really rough, like super rough. And the most recent iterations, they're pretty polished and like they look a lot better than they used to. They're acted better than they used to be. And that's cool and charming, but I also feel like this one is accessible. Like they've made an effort to making it accessible that might be the wrong direction for a good Sherlock Holmes game.
Oh, really?
Oh.
In what ways?
Okay. So I'm going to make a comparison here between this and one of the stronger entries in their series, Sherlock Holmes and Jack the Ripper.
That was before this one?
Yeah, that was some years
ago. Okay. How many of these have you played? Wait, are you secretly the world's biggest Sherlock Holmes Frogwares fan?
He super is.
No, but...
Yeah? This is...
I actually haven't played a ton
of
these.
Is your Pokemon just a frog with a Sherlock Holmes hat?
It is.
My Pokemon is a top hat and with a magnifying glass sticking out of it.
It was just like mean to everyone in his life, and he's just kind of an asshole about how smart he is.
Yeah, his name is Toria. But anyway, so I'm not the world's foremost authority on Frog Wars games. However, my girlfriend is a huge Sherlock Holmes fan. And has played a lot of these and has, like, singled out the good ones for me. And so I have a good picture of, like, what that series looks like and, like, how it's developed. But then I've also played Jack the Ripper and this most recent one.
Right.
So Jack the Ripper is a real deduction game. Like, there is some... And some of it's made tricky by some of the interface issues. But, like, there is a lot of scrutinizing crime scenes and picking together, like, really ambiguous clues... And then figuring out how they can assemble to tell the story of, like, how a crime unfolded. Like, you're basically making deductions about, like, the method of murder. What exactly unfolded. You know, you're reconstructing crime scenes. With Crimes and Punishments, you're kind of just observing things until you get, like, a clue. And then... Oh, and this is important. The game has also been lightly poisoned and infected... by that terrible BBC Sherlock series.
Ah, you're not a fan of Moffat's take on the...
I think that series got off to a good start, but...
What do people call Sherlock Holmes again? Like the old wit?
The old wit?
What do they call him? Well, he has like a nickname, right?
I like the old wit.
They call him the greatest detective ever in old London town or something.
The world's greatest
detective, yeah. I think that's...
I think that's Batman,
I like the
obviously.
The old wit.
That's
I really
what they
call like
something
the old
like
wit.
That.
You've Damn done it again, wit. Old wit, said
that's,
Watson.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what he always goes. He goes like, it's a clue. That's the famous Sherlock Holmes quote.
Yes, and then
so
he
they
holds
just
it
put
out.
That right... And
I
then
think
he holds
that's Mario.
Oh, sorry.
It's a clue!
Right.
Actually, the old Sherlock Holmes stories are basically on a par with, like, the original Resident Evil, to be honest,
right.
Like, in terms of writing. Very similar,
sure.
In fact. Sherlock Holmes in the Raccoon City was a very strange adventure.
Dr. Watson is the master of lockpicking, so that's true.
He is. I mean, he actually really is. So...
No, but the BBC series, I think, started strongly and then became really shitty. And the big problem was twofold. One is that Moffat can't actually design a mystery, which Conan Doyle could. And
I like that we've just pivoted here and just like, let's just fucking dunk on Stephen Moffat.
No, but that series really sucks.
I'm fine with.
I hate it so much. And the other thing is...
How do you feel? Okay, keep going.
Every dramatic or key character development moment in that series turns out later to have been a lie. Like, he plays everything for emotion and pathos and, like, the hint that things are about to change. And then every time it's, oh, but actually, through the magic of editing, none of this was real. And it's like, yeah, congratulations. You figured out that you have an editing bay and a fucking camera. Go straight to hell.
I want to know more about how you feel about various Sherlock Holmes
interpretations. How about the Lucy Liu and Johnny Lee Miller?
That show has, like, one of my favorite Sherlock Holmes moments in it, which is Sherlock being told the fuck off by, what's the detective's
Marcus,
name?
Marcus.
By Marcus. Yes.
I Googled it too.
There's this amazing moment in that show. First of all, I think that the show is actually really
It is.
Decent.
It's really good.
He's an asshole, I think that the show is, like, really warm and interested in mysteries and in, like, the joy of solving mysteries.
Yeah, and in the process of becoming good at solving mysteries, which is
But there's this moment where Sherlock does this bit where he's like, oh, Marcus, I'm very impressed by your wit. Like, I don't know what the police would have done without you. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, Sherlock, like, before you came around, there were just bodies piling up all through New York. Police didn't solve a case for 15 years. And, like, it's this really great moment of, like, yeah, you're a genius who solves weird bullshit where, like, oh, right, you knew that USB drives only worked on the left side of this building for some fucking stupid reason. You know, but people solve crimes all the time. Everybody is solving crimes in the police department. It's a very good moment. Oh, and also, that character is just great.
Marcus has another really great moment, and it's actually related to what we're talking about. There's this point where Case is unfolding near an old shuttered insane asylum.
Yes.
And Sherlock starts holding forth on, it's so interesting we're out here. I wish we had time to visit it. This institution was actually where the first electroshock, and he starts doing his, like, I'm the most knowledgeable person in the world, you know, hear me speak. And Marcus just cuts him off, like, finishes the anecdote, like, explains the context of the institution. He's like, yeah, I know. I Googled it, too, before we came out here.
Oh, it's so good.
It's amazing. It was great.
Right.
Which is also really interesting because one of the things that we often talk about with genre story in general, especially when we talk about horror and also when we talk about mystery, is like, what is the setting of this story, and how does that limit or change the ways in which characters interact with it, right? So like the classic example is in horror movies now, they always have to get rid of cell phones because cell phones completely change the drama. Or you sometimes see the flip, which is like, cell phones become key to the horror in some way, where it's about the who is in control of the cell phone. Like Get Out, obviously, there was this whole thing of like, who is his phone charged? Or the other thing that can happen is like, the cell phone is the source of the terror. Someone else is tracking you by your cell phone or has access to your information or something like that. The thing that I love about Elementary is that like, I think it does a good job consistently of telling a Sherlock Holmes story that incorporates modern day like conveniences.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And incorporates them into the mystery in a way that treats them realistically instead of trying to like cut them out. Anyway, it's
also
cool when people do
one of the most smartly inclusive shows I've ever seen. It deals with things like addiction and gender like incredibly well. There's this moment where Watson is sort of on the tail end of a relationship that was like good but not great, and it's like falling apart. And Watson kind of like Holmes kind of offers up. He's like, "Are you sure like monogamy is for you?" Like not in any sort of judgmental tone but he's just are you sure that you're not just trying to force something that isn't like true to who you are? And it becomes an interesting like conversation for those characters, like, you know, where do we fit with all this? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's a good Sherlock Holmes series.
Sorry, how is this Frogwares game?
Okay.
Video game.
So it's doing the sort of BBC Sherlock thing of like, his intelligence is like a force of magic. And you'll have like floating text kind of indicating like, look, a clue. And the way you assemble your deductions is just the stuff you observe now has become, boy, this is really hokey. You go into the deduction interface.
Okay.
And it's all a bunch of like floating darkened neurons.
Oh,
and every time you sort of make a connection between two pieces of evidence, a neuron lights up. And it has two different ways you can interpret it. And then as you assemble more clues, like you start to see the connections and the neurons fire and they build toward new conclusions. And then eventually once you're done, you're sort of ready to make your deduction and you sort of point the finger at who you think what done it. And that's sort of the game. And then there's also some like mini games such as arm wrestling. Is this sailor hardy enough to have harpooned a dude straight through his chest into a wall? One way to find out, and that's with an arm wrestling minigame.
Right, but you're not trying to win the arm wrestling in that case, right? You're just trying to like challenge him to see how tough.
No,
he
you
is.
Gotta win it.
That's not how it works.
I know.
It's really not.
I know. But until
Sherlock has to be superior both physically and mentally to everybody else in the room.
That then feels like the Guy Ritchie version of Sherlock Holmes.
Game of Shadows wasn't bad, by the way. I'm just going to say that.
Okay. I believe you. I didn't see it.
Jared Harris was good.
It was all right. It was all right.
Okay, don't look at me.
Noomi Rapace was in it. That made me happy.
I'm not here to shit talk. Whatever the thing you just said was.
All right.
Was it called Game of Shadows? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm making sure I'm actually listening.
Yeah. So it's fine. It's got like lots of fun Sherlock Holmes atmosphere. You know, lots of, you know, crackling fires, you know, gaslit rooms, stormy, rainy nights. But what it's lacking is the feeling that you really are sort of playing a Sherlock Holmes story in the way that I think other Frogwares games did succeed in, like, letting you inhabit that fantasy. And right. this one is more, again, it's that BBC approach.
Well, it's a different where it's
like, fantasy. Yeah, it's like...
Right?
Very much so.
Because the fantasy of those previous games sounds like the fantasy, and for me this is like the fantasy of Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective also, which I love, is like, oh, I want to solve a mystery.
Yes.
The fantasy, what it sounds like of the game you're describing is I want to be the person who solved a mystery. I want to be the person who figured it out. I don't want to figure it out. The fantasy
right,
isn't figuring it out.
That's actually abstracted out.
Right, exactly.
The sort of cruft of the solving right. is actually like... That's fine.
That's who cares about the solving.
Make your neurons.
Or I want to do some light version of the solving. Right. I want to do the bits where I draw a line from point A to point B, but not necessarily. I don't want all those points all over the place.
Yeah.
I don't know. It can be a bummer because we don't get a lot of games that give you that other type of mystery solving.
And they used to. Almost never. And that's the really frustrating thing is like,
welcome to old gamers. With a
old,
Z.
Old gamers.
We try to stay young. That's why you put that
the
Z in there.
Old gamers hour.
The things used to be better when you could solve mysteries on your own without the brain node lighting up and letting you know you got the clue right and all the arm wrestling. These days, mysteries.
It's too easy. That's, I liked it when it was hard.
What's your favorite?
I have no idea.
What's your favorite not Sherlock? Like, what's your favorite house or your favorite Batman or your favorite like, oh, this is Sherlock Holmes. This is just Sherlock Holmes, but twisted a little bit.
Well, it's not smart in that wonderful puzzle-solvy way, but there is a game I truly love, and that's called Murdered Soul Suspect, and it has a whole bunch of crime scene investigation. Okay. You're a
from,
ghost.
From our
detective.
Neck of the woods.
Yeah.
From Salem, Massachusetts, and you're exploring Salem as a ghost. The reason it's awesome is not for the mystery solving. That stuff is pretty standard. You know, you get your clues and you put them together and it's pretty simple. But, like, it has a lot of really great ghost stories in it. And you can go around, you meet other ghosts, you figure out how they died and what happened to them. It's awesome. Everybody should play it. It's very underrated.
Okay. I saw someone play it and it looked okay.
It's really fun.
You should
fun.
Do a piece on this or a guide to games or something.
I already wrote a guide to games.
Oh, is this one of the other guide to games you're talking about today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Right,
good. We'll see more about you talking about.
Yeah, I might, you know, we'll see.
We'll see. Who could say?
Who could say? That's a mystery.
Also, to be clear, I'm not saying what's your favorite detective. I think there's a difference here between
I agree.
Like, okay, I'm going to make sure.
This is my
people
favorite
in the
game
chat were
about
like,
mystery solving.
People in the chat were saying like, oh, like that's any TV show or like Deadly Premonition. And I don't know that, I don't think that. Agent York Morgan is actually a very Sherlock Holmesy character. He's like a very Dale Cooper character, but Dale Cooper isn't a very Sherlock Holmesy detective. Anyway, sorry. No, I don't think he is. Rob, what about yours? I want to know.
I don't know. Like, I mean, like I can go all day for like favorite versions of Holmes. The best one, obviously, is the Jeremy Brett Granada television series.
Yeah, sure.
That's the pinnacle.
You sure it's not Data in The Next Generation?
I don't like those episodes.
No, I don't.
I love them.
Those episodes are interesting. I don't know. It's interesting to see him get a little smarmy. Anytime Data like is allowed to be like, oh, right, I'm the smartest one in the room, and playing Sherlock in those episodes lets him do that.
It's really cute.
It's very good.
I will. Yeah. So an interesting, like maybe a series that deserves a little bit of a nod here is this series starring Clive Owen from ages ago called Second Sight.
Interesting.
And that is a series where he is sort of a elite detective with sort of a Scotland Yard special investigations unit. And in the very opening episode, he is diagnosed with, what is it? It's progressive vision disorder that eventually like leads to blindness. It comes and goes. And he decides he's going to try to fake it. He's involved in high risk situations and he's increasingly like becoming vision impaired, like trending toward blindness, and he is trying to fake his way through his entire job. And so you've got two things happening. One is that he's trying to solve these cases, but then he's also like turning his deductive powers to try to help him replace his failing vision sense with like, you know, like he, like to find a way to live without that now. And so it's like this sort of detective story on two levels as he's trying to like both solve these crimes and then use his abilities to navigate
adapt
his life.
To, right. That's interesting. I think my favorite is probably a cheat because it's only half of a Sherlock, but is also somebody who is pretending to be a thing, which is the Mentalist, Patrick Jane from the Mentalist. I think the Mentalist is like legit good TV.
Is it?
Like, yeah, dude, you should go watch the Mentalist. It's like deeply charming, but more importantly, it blends Sherlock Holmes style mystery solving with the setting and stakes of film noir and hardboiled detective drama. Ooh. Like that's a show that's all about the you know, the country, the state, the county, the city, right? And like various factors at each level interacting and like grappling over land rights and like who is backstabbing who and who is loyal to who. And like it's a California based story. Sure. They are like HQ'd in Sacramento. And so it's lots of like small town sheriff does not want the fucking feds coming in. And they are positioned at this like middle area of like they're like the this kind of California wide, like the California Bureau of Investigation. And then he's just like is the Sherlock Holmes character in that he is hyper-perceptive and incredible at deducing things, and then also is the kind of hard-boiled detective, like doesn't know when to – you know, uses his smart mouth to get him into trouble so that he can find out more shit.
Yeah.
And also is just like a good liar who pretends to be a mentalist and a psychic. A lot of people are don't like that show because they like Psych more and think that like it was ripping off Psych. And I'm fine with them with saying like, oh yeah, I bet someone saw Psych and was like, let's do that but less goofy.
Yeah, I thought Psych was like a musical comedy.
It's not a musical comedy.
I think they've done musical episodes.
I've never seen it.
Of course they've done musical episodes. It's 2017.
Who hasn't?
Who hasn't done a musical episode at this point?
Legion has a lot of musical
episodes. Yeah, I bounced hard off Psych and then immediately fell into The Mentalist and fucking loved it. So people should watch that.
I rejected The Mentalist because like, I figured with that name, like it just sounded like the worst CBS procedural ever where he's like,
is a CBS
he's got The Mentalist. He's got those powers.
No, because he's just a liar, right? Like he's just like – what was the dude who faked seances? I don't know if they ever – he never
– John something?
John whatever. John,
it's not John Stewart, but it's like John
– the dude
it
who
– it sounds like John Stewart.
French
not
Stewart.
John Stewart? French Stewart. That's it. French Stewart. Princeton. It was one of those guys. He's one of those. He was like, oh, I'll connect you to your dead relatives.
Okay.
And then basically insulted a serial killer. And it's like – it is the terrible setup of like, oh, and then the serial killer killed his family. Obviously. Yeah. And then for like seven seasons, he's trying to find the serial killer.
Wait, that's the setup?
Yeah.
That's
for the
dark
Mentalist.
Fucking shit.
Dude, yeah. And then like, let me tell you, the resolution on that stuff is not the thing you think it is. It's very good.
John Edwards.
John
yes.
Edwards. Thank you.
It was like
you.
A very
right.
kind of English-sounding
okay.
name.
Right.
Okay.
John Edwards, but not the politician.
Right.
Also, that's the other
I'm thinking of John Edwards on the Sci-Fi Channel when Sci-Fi was going through that horrible reboot.
Also, yeah. kind of a compulsive liar, if we're being honest.
Also true.
Not wrong.
Yeah. So really, though, the show should have been called, like, The Fabulist, but then somebody at CBS was like, no, you can't make a show called The Fabulist.
The Mesmerist?
Sounds like a fashion show.
No, because he doesn't mesmerize people.
All right, he's reading.
He's
rather
reading,
than
he's seeing the dead, and he's communicating with the dead, and he's a psychic. He can read people's minds. Yeah. Like, but he can't. He can't do any of that. They don't play it as if he can. It's very good. People should.
That sounds rad. Actually,
it also has really good like stingers, like really good like the musical like hits. Oh, that's so good. Anyway, I think we should take a quick dip in the question bucket. It's Friday, which means that we go into the past. We dig into
way back
the questions from the before time.
We intuit your questions
right with our eyes closed.
With our eyes closed.
Give me a number from one to a high number.
Rob,
43.
It's yours.
43. I almost said good year and then thought about it for a second.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm trying to think who that could have been a good year for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe Argentinian real estate agents.
Yeah. Good.
This is from Alex, who says,
all right, Alex.
With the release of The Last Guardian, it seems like review scores are mixed because of bad controls and a poor camera system. While most reviews praise the story, reviewers greatly vary on how much the actual game detracts from the rest of the experience. In other media, I don't think we would praise a piece of art for evoking emotions but being a bad representation of what the art is. For example, a blurry movie wouldn't be praised, and a CD that skips every few seconds wouldn't be considered good music. In both cases, I'm assuming issues aren't artistic intent. Why don't we always consider the medium with games? I've had a similar experience with playing The Last of Us. I loved the story, but had a number of glitches and issues with the gameplay. In the end, I just watched the cutscenes on YouTube and didn't feel a need to finish it myself. Shouldn't games strive to put gameplay first, or are we destined to play a medium that is increasingly trying to emulate something else, film? I think this is a really complicated question.
It is.
And also makes a lot of assumptions about what is analogous between different forms of media.
Yeah. And I do think, of course, just saying that there are instances where things being a little broken or a little crappy is a actual artistic decision, and it's actually kind of great.
Right.
You know,
sometimes,
there's a few, you know, sort of sterling gold examples of that.
What comes to mind for you?
Oh, God. It's not – I don't know why I can't think of the name of it. The Agent Dale Cooper game. The game.
Oh, Deadly Premonition.
Yes, Deadly Premonition is sort of like the shining example. Yeah. Or a lot of things that are sort of emulating the PS1 era. There's a lot of like tiny horror games on itch.io that are like 3D and they kind of look like crap. And that's the point. Like the point is to evoke a lot of those older games.
And also, for what it's worth, I do want to say that we do judge film and books
like this. Yeah.
It's just that – we don't talk about them glitching. I mean, you would judge a film if it came out and the camera was out of focus or the boom mic dropped into frame.
Right.
That doesn't happen as often.
But there's also, like, this was just not artistically shot.
Right.
Like, something
exactly.
like The King's Speech looks like – it looks like shit to me. It's the most boringly framed movie ever. And I couldn't understand why that wasn't more of a criticism.
A lot of people who write into us watch movies the way most of the world plays games.
Sure.
They take out their phone every now and then and they play Crazy Taxi Gazillionaire. And that game is really cool, by the way. Or they occasionally will play a Halo game that comes out because they've always played the Halo games. Or they'll play NBA 2K whatever because they follow the NBA and love those games. And don't have the lexicon that people like Alex, who's written into us, do with games because it's not their main mode of kind of entertainment. But if you watch film a lot, you develop an aesthetic sense for things that are similar to bad gameplay controls, which is like, this is just like a really shitty shot. Oh, this is people who have watched a lot of action movies can tell you like the clear difference between a Michael Bay action sequence and something that would appear in something like John Wick or something that was like Ong Bak. Like there are different styles of shooting action in film that you only know because you've developed a relationship with
film. The bad cuts.
You can see the bad cuts.
The boring takes.
Right.
You can see blemishes.
And that's the same for music. That's the same for writing. Like pacing in novels is really hard to do right. And if you've read a lot of novels and have studied it and have done your own writing inside of that space, you can tell when a novel has been poorly paced. Like that's not a thing that you miss. And it feels to me often the same as, this isn't controlling right. Like,
yes.
I don't know that those two are exactly analogous, but they're similar. You can make that similar thing, which is like, I really like the plot of this book. But, like, the pacing is just killing me.
Yeah.
Or, like, the prose is just, like, it's just so
– clunky or
– exactly, clunky or, like, it's so
dampish.
Long-winded. It's dampish, yes. it's oppressive.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that you can say, right? Like,
yes.
You can say, like, you know, I really liked reading The Road and, like, couldn't get through Blood Meridian. And I don't think that Blood Meridian's a bad book. But the prose there felt to me – clunky is the wrong word for it, but like I just had a hard time finding my flow in a very similar way to when I'm playing an action game that requires a certain sort of flow that I'm just like not capable of hitting or something like that. Or like playing like Project Cars, a racing game that like has really, really realistic controls and demands from you in the same way that certain books can demand a certain level of like, I need to stay with this fucking sentence. It's like 30 lines long. I need to stay with it. I can't forget what the first five words were. I have to focus. That stuff happens. And so that would be my main thing. With regard to this. Rob, do you have any thoughts?
I think it really varies from game to game. Like, I think where this breaks down a little bit is – actually, maybe it doesn't break down at all. Like games, like any other art form, can be pursuing a lot of different ends. Like, some games – like, if you're analogizing games to music, for instance – some games are trying to be opera, where the music is not necessarily the entire point. Like, there's elements of dance and writing, like, sort of mixed in there as well. And you could sort of point any one of those elements and be like, well, it's not actually really great at this. It's like missing out on the purity of dance. But the point is to try to combine all these elements, and some will be stronger than others. And it's kind of about the effect that combination produces in you. And I think that's where a game like The Last Guardian is sort of coming from. It's not a 3D platformer where the entire thing is just how well do you navigate these characters through the space. It's about what that experience elicits and how you relate to it. And it's a little bit reductive to say, like, well, what about the gameplay?
Right. I guess in that to that point, like, when Alex, you write that, you know, shouldn't games strive to put gameplay first? No. There's no reason that games should think about gameplay. Like, that is definitely a thing that you can do as a game maker, is to think about what are we talking about when we say gameplay? That's like a very contested space and field. Like, that's
what are
like
your goals?
What are your goals? What are you trying to achieve with this piece? And it's sometimes it is, like you just said, Rob, like a really tight platformer where like every jump feels really good. And other times it's some other sense, it's something else. Right. Yeah. I mean, this is something you teach a lot
when you talk about player experience goals.
Right? Like, that's your go
to
every week. Please.
Every week.
I mean that. Like, I think that's a totally good way to think about what a developer is trying to achieve, right?
Yeah. I think so. It works for me.
For people who maybe missed those episodes.
Oh, sure. 'Cause
that was like 40 episodes.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, one of the most basic things when I teach very, very entry-level game design classes is every decision you make, whether to put something in or take something out, to test something, et cetera, does this further the emotional or sort of physical experience you want your player to have? Like, everything should be, what is the goal? Do you want to scare your player? Do you want to make them laugh? Do you want to make them feel powerful? Do you want to make them feel disempowered? Like, everything should support that, you know, sort of high-level goal. And that's a player experience goal.
Yeah, I think that works. I think that is like as good of a paradigm as any to think about games in a more holistic sense that doesn't only prize some element over the other.
Or just fun.
Right,
fun
or just
gameplay.
Fun.
The thing that needs nothing.
Which is an empty phrase, right? There has been this Ebert quote going around Twitter. Did you see the Gamera Ebert quote going around? I'll just read it because I think that there's something interesting here in relation to what we're talking about. He writes, there's a learning process that moviegoers go through. They begin in childhood without sophistication or much taste. And for example, like Gamera more than Air Force One, because flying turtles are obviously more entertaining than United States presidents. Then they grow older and develop taste. In quotes, and prefer Air Force One, which is better made and has big stars and a more plausible plot. Isn't it more believable, after all, that a president could single-handedly wipe out a plane load of terrorists than a giant turtle could spit gobs of flame? Then, if they continue to grow older and wiser, they complete the circle and return to Gamera again, realizing that while both movies are preposterous, the turtle movie has the charm of utter goofiness, and in an age of flawless special effects, it is somehow more fun to watch flawed ones. And I think that, like, that's that third step that I'm waiting to get to. I feel like we are so deep on that second step right now. I've spoken a lot about my personal taste about like the Naughty Dog school of storytelling in games, the sort of like super well done, super well shot.
Yeah.
Very like influenced by a certain style of cinema. And to Alex's point, like, this is part of what he talks about, where he says, like, I ran into the problems with The Last of Us. You know, obviously I've also spoken about my ups and downs with The Last of Us, my ups and downs with the Uncharted series. And I want gaming in general to move to that third place, which is not just the cinematography gets better, and it's not just every game is focused first and foremost on quote unquote the gameplay. It's where we can think about, like, okay, what is the thing that we're hitting really well here? What is the thing that's charming about what we want to make? And, you know, what is the effect we want to have?
I feel like Doom was a flash of that.
Totally.
A flash. Not all the way to the third step.
Can you speak more about
but
that?
It was, well, just that it embraced the charming things about it. It embraced the goofiness. It embraced the sort of spirit of the 1993, the original games that were absolutely about speed and a goofy demon doing a goofy thing and being like, no, 100%, we're gonna hearts on our sleeves, we're going to embrace all of this instead of being like very self-serious about it or very like, oh no, this is our grander ambition. It's like, no, we're going to really dive in on what's fun about this, what's enjoyable about this. Mm-hmm. And they went with that player experience goal. I'll keep saying it.
And it worked.
And it worked. I really like
that because Doom 3 is very much that second step of like,
yes,
this needs exactly to be polished and plausible. Like, and how do the demons get to the Martian base? Well, it turns out there was this corporation doing lots of lab work. And trust us, this is all going to make sense. Hell is real. And it's come to the Martian base. And it's, I actually like Doom 3 a lot more than a lot of other people. But it is this like sort of self-serious, muggy slog. Doom
mucky or muddy?
Both.
Okay.
And Doom kind of and New Doom kind of shit cans all that, and it's like actually it's more fun to sort of nod at the pointlessness of trying to explain all this and just get to that experience.
And hell energy. All right, also, we're going to use hell energy. Okay. Let's just do it. Let's just go with it.
I have another thing to say, and I'm going to bounce off of a thing that Dixavid says in the chat. Wouldn't the success of player stories in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and Zelda, in contrast with Gone Home and Dear Esther, represent that shift? I think that's like a very zoomed in look at the last 5 to 6 years of games, that like the only way you can make that comparison is by ignoring a billion other super successful things. Again, like The Last of Us, like the other Naughty Dog games, like Uncharted, 3 and 4, and also ignore other things that are happening that were already happening in that player-driven story stuff around like the Far Cry series, around roguelikes, around a billion other things that were already doing both of those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I would say is, at the end of the day, I don't know that third step for us is just a return to goofiness.
Right.
It's a return to that childlike wonder that says, wow, what can games do? Instead of this like diehard devotion to, and now we must reach the pinnacle of our art. And in that way, I think I am aligned with Alex, who wrote in, who doesn't want us to just focus on telling Hollywood stories. But I don't think the solution to that is the shooting should be good. I think we should keep telling Hollywood-style stories with games. We should also keep doing all these other things.
Yes.
I think that the hobby is big enough because, like, film is big enough. Novels are big enough. Music is big enough. Like, pop music I went all through a long period of my life where I hated pop music because I was that person. I think a lot of people went through that phase.
Sure.
And then I was like, oh, like having less pop music that I don't like in this world. First of all, there's lots of really good pop music. Second of all, lots of pop music loops back in and influences the sort of music I did like. Third, having a pop star does not take away from my ability to also listen to other stuff.
Exactly.
And I think that's hopefully becoming more and more the way things are in gaming, as there are more and more places to buy and support developers who are not working that stuff.
Do you think our brains just do this thing where it's like, oh, because all things or most things about human psychology are devoted to, oh, there's limited resources, how do I get mine?
Right.
We do this with entertainment fields that are not necessarily
maybe.
In a capitalist society nothing is free, completely free, but something like ideas or something like stylistic movements. Do you think we just do this even though it's unnecessary?
I don't know that let me like walk back what I just said a second ago.
It's cool, but
an alternative perspective is, if I needed to make that argument, not a devil's advocate argument, I think there's actually value in this argument.
Which is
to some degree there are limited resources. When I look at what was put on stage,
especially
at
with
E3,
anything with a budget.
When I look at what was put on stage at E3, I think there was a great range and variety of the types of games that were there. I also think, with the exception of a brief blip in the Xbox briefing, they were all AAA, big budget games where millions and millions and millions of dollars went into them. Even some of the indie games that were on stage at the Microsoft
the AAA
one
indies,
are big indies, right? Whatever you want to call it. And so the thing there is like maybe there is the case that the reason that someone gets upset about that stuff or gets invested and does feel like is because there are creators and there are styles of art that don't have the same access to not only the spotlight, like maybe those people won't get to make rent and keep making things like this,
right?
That the spotlight is not a goal. The spotlight is another tool by which you can see the sort of thing that you like in the world continue to exist.
Yeah.
Music and film are in a place now where I don't know that I ever will risk that. Like, I will always get to go onto a website and hit what are the new jazz albums coming out. I'm not saying that jazz is in like the highest highs it's ever been. Like, jazz is not the pop music of the world anymore. I will always be able to listen to like interesting hip hop at this point. I will always be able to listen like what's happening in shoegaze in 2017.
Sure.
Shoegaze still exists somehow in 2017, and it's fucking good. And like that music is at this point, not sustaining, because what actually happens is, like, my favorite bands exist for 3 or 4 years, and then they stop existing, and then another band comes in and takes that spot and tries to have their run at it. I don't know that games are there quite yet, but it feels like we're getting there in that respect. We're we do get projects that show up and creators who show up for 3 or 4 years, make some really interesting stuff. And then when they – if they do leave or decide to stop making games or take a break, other people are making similar enough things that I'm – I feel kind of – you know, sated, I guess. So, yeah. People who don't know what shoegaze is, people should fucking listen to some dope shoegaze. Please, please listen to good shoegaze bands.
It's when you it's like the male gaze.
It's
but when you stare at your shoes.
That's literally where that term came from. I know.
Have you ever seen a Quentin Tarantino movie? It's like that.
It's a lot like that. Have you ever seen a movie? I don't
Japanese
shoegaze
is really strong right now.
Quentin Tarantino
gamer
movies and men.
That's a really good piece.
It's a good piece.
Where was that?
All I know is that Dory retweeted.
Where was it? Oh, it was
on.
It was on McSweeney's.
Oh, McSweeney's.
People should look
up
the all the dudes I've dated who are experts in Quentin Tarantino
movies. It's a great article. Everyone should read it.
All right, I think it's going to do it for us this week. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
Danielle RI on Twitter.
And you, Rob?
At Rob Zachney.
People can find Tim Barnes, our podcast producer, at TimBarnes451 on Twitter. Natalie, what is your Twitter handle? At Natalie Watson for our great live stream producer standing in for our normal producer. You can find everything we do on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice. Check the site later today. I have a really long interview with Reggie Fils-Aimé.
Yeah.
Reggie Fils-Aimé going up. sometime in the next couple of hours.
Awesome.
There's a little bit of a video component to it, but mostly it's just like this super long. I don't want to say we get heated, but there's some contentious stuff
get
there about
it,
fan creations
bit.
And about some other kind of Nintendo practices. So look forward to that. Other than that, I want everyone to have a good weekend. It's try to stay cool and not muggy or humid or moist or oppressed. Don't say oppressed if you can fucking help it.
Yeah.
Whatever you do,
stay away from that one.
Don't be oppressed.
You don't want that one.
I know it's not your fault if you are. And sometimes the world just puts you in that position. But if you can get out from under it, let me tell you.
Try.
Do it. All right. What is it that we tell them, Daniel?
Well, I'm going to say two things this week.
Okay.
I'm going to say Happy Pride, New York City.
True. One.
And then I'm going
to
say...
Wait, I have to say another thing, which is if you want to hear more from Bowen, who's letting us use his great song, Miss You, off the EP Pale Machine, you can go to waypoint.zone/BOEN.
Perfect.
What's the third thing?
Third thing? Be good or be good at it.
All right. Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.